Hello and welcome to Gut Heroes. This is a gut digest episode, so I'm going to look at some of the most interesting stories and news that I found in the gut health space. These are things that really caught my eye, and they include a law that has been passed on junk foods and ultra-processed foods, one of the most profound, or the most profound we've seen in history. There's also an interesting study on menopause and hot flushes. So this looks at how diet can affect that. And then finally, we'll finish up with a bit of a left field one, which is, does eating refined carbs for breakfast make you less attractive? So I found this one really interesting. So we'll kick off from the top. And the first one is about Colombia. So in November last year, so November 2023, they passed the most comprehensive law on junk foods that we've seen in history. So the aim of this is to tackle what you might call lifestyle diseases. Bit of a strange term, but effectively it's a bit of a health tax, and it's focused, laser focused on ultra processed foods. And it's come about after really years of campaigning by the Colombians, by specific advocacy groups. And there was a good reason for this, because at the moment Colombia has the highest rate of salt consumption in a day. So it's about 12 grams a day. That's for the average Colombian. And nearly a third of adults have high blood pressure. So they've got a raft of diseases which are linked to diet and obesity. So things like diabetes, and apparently a third of deaths attributed to diabetes have occurred among people who are under 70. So it's really reached a crisis point. And diseases like this account for something like 76% of all deaths in Colombia. So it's sad, really, that sometimes things have to get this far for something to happen, but hats off to Colombia for really leading the world in making a dramatic change. And it's going to be fascinating to see how this unfolds. And there's a quote here from Beatriz Champagne, who is the executive director for the Coalition for Americas. And she said, "We want to avoid following the path of rich industrialized nations like the US, where diet-linked diseases are a big problem." So I think that's something we're all aware of. The US is really hitting a crisis on diseases related to the Western diet, and in particular, ultra-processed foods. So other countries are starting to identify the problems they're experiencing, and we'll see how this pans out. So how are Colombia making this one happen? So what are they actually doing on the ground? Well, the idea is that they're going to introduce a levy gradually, and this is going to cover things like manufactured foods. So basically ultra-processed foods, things with multiple ingredients, things that have had additives added and things to increase the shelf life, and foods that are high in salt and saturated fat. So we're looking at things like, you know, crisps and convenience food and ready-made meals and chocolates, all of that kind of thing. And so to begin with, the additional tax on foods like this will start at 10%, and then this rises to 15% next year. And then next year in 2025, that's going to hit 20%. So really significant changes there. And on top of this, they're introducing mandatory health warnings on foods that have a high content of unhealthy ingredients. So high in sugar or saturated fat. Think of cigarette packet warnings that we've seen in Europe and the US and Australia, that kind of thing. And they're not actually the first to do this. Two other South American countries, Ecuador and Peru, have been really fantastic on this. So this feels like an exciting step in the right direction, and we're going to start to see some results from this. And if it works well, I really hope this is something that other countries will follow in the footsteps of. There's going to be some critics, particularly the food producers, and they are ringing the bell of saying, oh, this hurts the poor and those are the people that are going to be affected. But actually, when you have massive food producers spamming the population with stuff that is nutritionally so poor and is making people sick, making people unhealthy, making them unable to work, making their lives more fatigued, causing mental health problems, all of those things, and that is not an exaggeration. If you do those things, people's lives are going to be shorter, they find it harder to work, attention spans go down. At the extreme end of this kind of food is almost like a terrible drug that takes so much away. So I think the argument that this is removing something from people who can't afford it is the wrong way of looking at it. If you push and you force the food producers to create healthier foods and take this rubbish off the shelves, you're going to lower the price for foods which are healthier. That's the way it will work. That's the way economies of scale work. At the moment, all of the incentive is for getting the longest lasting, cheapest products on the shelves. If they can produce something in a factory that's filled with things that's going to make it addictive tasting and last on the shelves for months or years, then the costs are tiny for them and they're going to be able to sell things for a ridiculously cheap price. If you flip the switch on that and say, no, you're going to have to pay a massive tax on that, then they're going to put their efforts into healthier foods, or at least I hope they do that. And then when you make it actually more cost efficient to produce healthier foods, then you start to see better prices all around. And I can see in the future, if it is really affecting people's ability to do the weekly shop, then why not subsidize it for people of a certain income level? I think that's one way you could do it. You could use that tax to add subsidies. I think there's all sorts of ways to solve the problem, but I don't think the right critique is saying we should produce terrible food that destroys lives because it's cheap. So I'll get off my soapbox and we'll move on to the next one. And that is a study titled A Dietary Intervention for Postmenopausal Hot Flashes, a Potential Role of Gut Microbiome and Exploratory Analysis. So this was a study done on women who were experiencing hot flashes, or hot flushes as we call them in the UK. And it was looking at how changes in gut microbiome when you change diet could affect the frequency and severity of those hot flushes in postmenopausal women. So this is a really interesting study. It took 84 postmenopausal women and they had to have been experiencing at least 2 moderate to severe hot flushes each day. You had 2 groups. You had a test group and they followed a low-fat vegan diet, which included 1/2 cup of cooked soybeans, and they had this daily for 12 weeks. And then you had the control group, so the people they were testing against to make sure what the differences were valid, they just maintained their normal diet, so what they were eating normally, nothing changed for them. And to monitor the results, they were giving everyone a mobile phone app where they could record the frequency and severity of the hot flushes. In addition to this, there was a gut microbiome analysis. And in case you're new to Gut Heroes, the gut microbiome is the world of microbiota that lives in your gut. So these are things that work with and sometimes against your body, and they have massive health outcomes, including feeling great, but including feeling really bad. So it's that world within us that works with our body and sometimes against it. So they did this gut microbiome analysis and they performed that on a subset of 11 women, both at the start and the end of the 12-week period. And they used something called deep shotgun metagenomic sequencing for that. So what were the findings from this study? It's quite incredible, actually. They found an overall reduction of 95% of the total hot flushes experienced. Severe hot flushes completely disappeared. So from 0.6 to 0 a day. And moderate to severe hot flushes decreased by 96%, daytime ones reduced by 96%, and nighttime ones reduced by 94%. So that is a massive finding. And what happened to that gut microbiome analysis, which was performed on 11 of the women who took part? So it did a couple of things. It increased the levels of a number of bacteria, which I won't even begin to try and pronounce, but I'll include a link so you can read this report in full. And it decreased levels of other bacteria. And this was linked to a reduction in severe daytime hot flushes and a reduction in total severe hot flushes and severe nighttime hot flushes and so on, everything I've talked about. So it seems like in those women who had their gut microbiome tested, there was a clear correlation here with the dietary change and how that was affecting the microbes and how that was affecting the hot flushes. An interesting side note from the study, one of these bacteria is linked to cardiovascular disease. So this could be something that explains some of the health benefits of the diet. A lot of information there. What were the kind of headline stats from that diet? And if you were someone who was wanting to try this, what were they doing? So they were switching to a low-fat diet that was entirely plant-based, and they were consuming 1/2 cup of cooked soybeans every day. Now, I want to talk about some study limitations here, and I'm going to say that I'm pretty sure this diet won't be for everyone. I think it's really fascinating because it does definitely show a correlation between food and the gut microbiome and certain health impacts. But this was a very small sample size, especially for that microbiome analysis, which I think was just 11 people, and there was no control group for that microbiome analysis. On top of that, we know that there are a lot of people who don't do well on a vegan diet alone. So that makes it quite tricky. You have this small test, which has been profoundly effective for those people who took part. But one of the things I want to always make clear with Gut Heroes and everything I'm talking about is that there is no one size fits all. There are some really interesting and exciting things you can try. But remember, no two people are the same. So for example, someone like me, I appear to have terrible health outcomes if I have starch in my diet or dairy, whereas someone else who's the same age might be the complete opposite. So they might be more plant-based and feel amazing. So it's a really interesting study, exciting that they're doing studies like this, but just bear in mind, we are all different. And I hope they do more studies like this in the future and we can start to get some more results and see how different groups fare. Okay, so I'm going to finish off with a bit of a fun one, I think. It's a strange one anyway, and it's from a French study, and it's called Chronic and Immediate Refined Carbohydrate Consumption and Facial Attractiveness. So specifically, it's looking how the consumption of refined carbohydrates affects the fatal attractiveness in men and women. And they look at this both immediately, and they do this for breakfast, and also chronically. So if someone's eating that kind of food all throughout the day. So in effect, it's been summarized by some media outlets as, does eating refined carbs make you ugly? So what did this study involve? Well, it took 104 French subjects, half men, half women, and they were all aged between 20 and 30. All of them were heterosexual and all had four grandparents of European origin. So I expect they did this. It sounds quite sort of linear the way they've done that. But I suspect they're trying to keep a very level control of people from similar backgrounds, similar beauty ideals, similar age ranges, because all kinds of cultural factors could come into play as what's deemed attractive and what isn't. So they're trying to really get as similar people as they can so that at least there is as far as it is possible to get a kind of baseline of what their subjective opinion of what attractive is. Something that's very hard to get right, obviously, but I think they've had a good go at that. So how did it work? So there were two tests here. So they got the immediate consumption, and that means the participants were given either a high glycemic or a low glycemic breakfast, and then they took photos of their faces 2 hours afterwards. And they were looking at chronic consumption as well. So they were looking at glycemic load at breakfast, afternoon snacks, in between meal snacks, that kind of thing. And then they were also controlling for factors like age, physical activity, BMI, whether they were smokers, all of that kind of thing. So I think let's get to the findings because these were really interesting. And what they found from this study is that a high glycemic breakfast, and by high glycemic, we're meaning things like sugary foods, white breads, refined carbohydrates, those kind of things. So a high glycemic breakfast reduced facial attractiveness for both men and women compared to a low glycemic breakfast. So that is absolutely bonkers. And then for the chronic effects, the overall trend was that higher chronic consumption of refined carbohydrates generally reduced facial attractiveness. For breakfast, a higher glycemic load reduced attractiveness, but a higher energy intake increased attractiveness for both sexes. So high energy intake, that's going to be a higher calorie intake really of fats, but a more balanced intake, not the kind of refined carbs, sugary foods type of breakfast. So just to kind of do a top level of the findings, it found that refined carbohydrate intake affects facial attractiveness differently for men and women. So for women eating high glycemic foods, which raises the blood sugar really quickly, during afternoon snacks made them less attractive, while for men it made them more attractive, although high energy snacks, which are higher in calories, had the opposite effect. Both men and women looked attractive when they had a low glycemic breakfast, and chronic high glycemic intake also reduced the attractiveness for both sexes, with women appearing older and men seeming less masculine. So they've got really specific here. And the takeaway from this would be, and this is going to be different for different people because some people thrive off different foods, but the takeaway is that reducing refined carbs at breakfast and in between meals improved attractiveness, and trying to balance energy intake, especially avoiding high calorie snacks in the afternoon, was really beneficial. And a few notes on how this one was run. So it was self-reported data on the demographics and lifestyle factors, and the glycemic load and energy intake was taken from dietary questionnaires, but they did body measurements and glycemia tests. And then in terms of the assessment, that was photographs, so as we've talked about, These were taken 2 hours afterwards and they were rated by opposite sex raters. And they tried to control for this with the same lighting, the same background, and the same participant expression to standardize the photos. So it's a really interesting one, quite a fun one. Again, like the previous study, not a lot of subjects in this, you know, just over 100, but nonetheless, really interesting, shows the really outsized impact something like what we eat and what is going on in our body can have on us. So I think we'll leave it there for today. I hope you enjoyed this gut digest. Let me know what you think, and I will see you next time.